I'm Cape.
And I'm Drew.
We're just two former student athletes who understand the game.
Not just on the court.
But in life.
At the end of the day, we just want to help.
Today's athletes and former just trying to find their way.
It's bigger than sports.
This is the Cape and Drew Podcast, the real TikTok. What's up, everybody? I'm Cape.
I'm Drew. And today, everybody, we got, episode 13. We got a special guest today, kind of in honor of our name. So we sent it around Hook 'em Horns. And today we got a special guest, Brother Malik Crowder, man. He works at University of Texas, Texas at Austin. And we met him at the Black Student Athlete Summit earlier this year.
Yes.
Kind of connected with him and kicked it off and just really kind of just vibe with him. And we just really wanted to touch base with everybody. And it's good to just reach back out to people that we've met and kind of established networks with. So, Brother Malik, how you doing today, man?
Hey, man. Drew, I'm doing well. Kate, man, I'm doing well. Glad to be with you, brothers.
Awesome, man. It's good to see you. Now, Drew, before we get started, I gotta tell a quick story about Malik. So, when we were presenting at the Black Student Athlete level, so just for everybody to know, we had 10 minutes to do this presentation. And so, It was cool and we felt like we was doing good, but every now and again when we would do a slide, I would hear, this was before I knew you, you was like a hype man. So like we would say something and then I hear this dude say, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir.
Exactly.
And so I appreciate that.
You know, the crazy thing is that really helped us though.
Yeah.
That, like kept us going. It was like, okay, it's almost like you hit your first couple shots, and you're like, all right, this is going to be a good game.
Yes, man. We appreciate it.
But, brother, that was natural because what you were saying was so relevant to our student-athletes there. So it was easy to say amen to brothers that talked about supporting student-athletes, holistic development. That was easy to support y'all.
We appreciate it, man. It got me hype. I'm looking like, hey, we might know what we talk about us. We got hype, man.
You do. A lot of wisdom.
Hey, so our first question, man, we kind of been starting this with everybody. So how are you doing, you know, during this whole time with just the COVID-19 stuff, man?
Wow. Yeah, we're hanging. My wife and I, we're hanging in, man, just trying to stay sane, keeping up with students as best as we can on Zoom, the Zoom calls. I'm snacking a little bit more than usual. But you know, I'll make that bike ride here and there, get some dumbbells and try to do some arms, some stretches. So, you know, hanging in there, but blessed. And can't wait till we're all healthy where we can be up and running, conferences. We were gonna take some students abroad to Dubai. That was postponed. So once everything is safe, we wanna start getting our global trips back on, getting folks of color, first gen Black folks abroad. Very important.
It's crazy. Even more when I talked to you last week, you was like, man, I keep walking by the refrigerator, man. That's been everybody's
real. The snack game is real, y'all.
Hey, I got a 4-year-old, and man, you know them snacks when you're a kid, like them Capri Suns, them little Oreos, the little cheesy joints. He like, why they keep going so fast? I'm
like, he's like, why are they dwindling? You like, who else is snacking?
My son loves them little. You know, we had Pop-Tarts in our day.
Yeah,
but, mini Pop-Tarts now. And I'm like, man, it takes everything in me in the morning not to pop one of those bad boys over for my son.
Yo, the snacks are next level.
They next level. We got Pop-Tarts and we got the old school joints. We keep those, whether it's COVID or not. We keep them, the brown sugar.
Either way, those go hard.
Yeah. Hey, so real quick, what's your role at the University of Texas? You know, what's your day-to-day like? What's your official role?
So my day-to-day is I'm assistant director in the Multicultural Engagement Center. So I get to work with a lot of folks of different identities and they come in and hang out. It's a home away from home. They do their homework, study groups, that kind of thing. We even offer some STEM tutoring in our cultural center. So a lot of people of color, Black folks, Asian folks, Native American folks, they've come into our spot each day. Warm up food, work on cultural programs at the student level, diversity work. So I do that. That's my day to day. So I have students that come to our center each day, 50 to 75 every day that I get to engage with. So that's my day to day. Now, my special projects, I get to work with student athletes. So with football, I get to do some recruitment of football players and talk to their parents about if they choose Texas, we're going to make sure they have some development. They're going to see brothers that look like us who are in various levels, staff, faculty, administration. So I get to do some football recruitment. And again, I don't have to worry about the coaching side, but I worry about here's the academic blueprint. We're going to try to get you abroad when it's off season. Holistic development, that kind of thing. So working in the Division of Diversity and Community Engagement, I get to do special projects going abroad, helping student athletes, and working with Dr. Moore, our vice president, on just supporting all kinds of students at UT.
So I told Kate, remember we talked last week, man, I was jealous, man. You said you got to interact with like 50 to 70 people a day. I was like, man.
Yeah, a lot of engagement.
And I wish I could have that kind of, just I knew that 50 people was coming through today.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, two things. First of all, what you're doing is awesome because I can imagine being a football player or student athlete and, you know, wanting to go to University of Texas, obviously, especially a football player. I mean, it's Texas. But then meeting somebody like you and seeing some people that look like me would help me make a better decision, because the fear of going to, because I would assume, like many universities, most of your football players are Black, but not only are they Black, they're coming from places where everybody does look like them potentially. And so then coming to a university like University of Texas, and that's their first time really being around other folks of different types of background and races, and then meeting you and seeing 50 to 75 people, you know, coming in and out as a recruit, you're like, okay, at least I know I have this space here if stuff gets too crazy.
Exactly.
How'd you get started with the Black Student Athlete Summit?
Man, that's a great question. So really, we pay all that homage and that honor goes to Dr. Moore. Dr. Moore knows how to get on a campus and assemble talent. So he'll want people who are going to do the academic side and then the student affairs side to wrangle the students together, to encourage them, to help advise them when they're choosing classes. So this is part of Dr. Moore's dream of having this conference where different wise folks like you, you know, Drew and Kate, to come to campus and to share best practices and to come up with better research on how to support student athletes, make sure they're holistically developed, that kind of thing. So we were like, we're at Texas, we have these resources. So we started off small and then the word got out. So I'm just part of that host committee to help when y'all come to campus to guide everybody, to make sure we have a good time, logistics, that kind of thing. So the fact that we work for the VP, he was like, I know y'all, your interest is making sure these student athletes do well and making sure ADs and professionals who come to campus are, you know, accepted and we help navigate the conference. So part of that team to make that happen.
And shout out to Dr. Moore too.
Yeah.
That dude, you know how you meet some people or you never forget certain people, man. And that dude, the way he was talking, the way he was like, the way he was just in that space when he addressed all of us and talked to us like, yo, this is some BS, yo. And hey, and I'm not going to let our coaches get away with B. I was like,
that's more of the truth. He's going to call it out.
Man, I was so impressed by him, man. And shameless plug, man. If y'all need some, you know, some two light skinned dudes to come do some consulting, just let us know, man. You know,
hey, Drew, y'all know y'all are family because, like I said, what I think we connected because y'all are doing the work. You were student athletes. You believe in not just being one dimensional. So I think that's what that bond. You part of the club of making sure that these men and women who are in athletics kind of use all their talents. So if you're playing ball, we have a sister playing ball, she can do her music and do her art and, you know, not be one, you know, siloed into one area. So y'all come with that research scholarship, you're smart brothers, you know, you swaggy, because you can be smart. I told y'all, you can be smart and not communicate. So y'all have the energy to communicate scholarship and wisdom. So appreciate y'all.
We appreciate that, man. I just followed Drew, man. I ain't had no swag before I met Drew, man.
I had to figure it out.
Real quick, how are things going on your campus with students and your student athletes? So has the University of Texas announced that they're reopening in the fall? Would there be fall face-to-face classes?
So here it is. It was just announced yesterday. Classes will start at UT August 26th. And here's the thing. We're going to start August 26th, but we're going to send you home Thanksgiving. And that's, I think the thinking is let people kind of have a full semester, go home. They know they're going to be traveling all over the place. I don't know if they want to bring all those folks who 50,000 students who've gone all over the world back. So I think it's going to be, well, we know they announced August 26th to Thanksgiving. You go home, and then I think they'll announce a January spring return to campus, and then we'll do it again. But I think we're going to do it semester by semester. But it is official. We return August, and then we send them home Thanksgiving. And then we just heard athletes can voluntary or involuntary, they can voluntarily come June 1st. They can come, you know they're coming. NCAA said they can come June 1st, athletes. So that was
every one of them will be on campus, will be there.
You know they don't want to give up that spot.
Voluntarily.
You know they coming.
Man, it's just crazy just because you starting to see, like, okay, this is really coming down to, like, the brass tacks and things. Like, yo, this is about money. And it's like,
about money.
Different people, like, well, we're going to leave it up to this place. Well, we're going to leave it up to that. And it's like, no one wants to take the full responsibility of shutting something down. They going to put it on everybody else, but they know, like, yeah, we need this. It's honestly, this is the biggest upper end student athletes I've ever had, kind of. Because, y'all need us right now. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So y'all know, y'all are former basketball players. The NBA is what really got things shut down when that started happening, and then everybody followed suit. So it seems like athletics is going to push things back, you know, some normalcy.
When the NBA happened, that was probably the first time I really got scared. Like, I thought I was in a horror movie.
You too, man.
I was like, I'm going home. I'm locking all my doors, and I'm holding my wife so tight because we've never seen, like, the NBA shut down. I can't remember us seeing really games getting canceled. The only time
the NBA ever got shut down is when there's a lockout. And that's
okay. Lockout.
Yeah. But I agree with y'all. When that happened, I was like, is the earth, is Jesus coming? Or it was a lot of drama because they were like, are they coming out to play or not? They were still in the locker room. So, yeah, that's what started it all.
So, with like everything, when it shut down, right, I was actually getting ready to take some students on a trip. And I was so locked in on getting the trip. You know, you plan it out. You got the hotel reservation. You got to travel. And I can remember AVC was all like, you know, make sure – that y'all are following all the guidelines for the COVID stuff. I was like,
that is
happening. And then boom, everything got shut down. And so now, have you found it easier to kind of communicate with your students just virtually and even your staff, really?
You know what? Even though we're on Zoom, it seemed like we can catch folks that wouldn't come in for one-on-one. They were busy or the classes were crazy. So I can catch them on the Zoom and we can have a quick chat. So some of the students I lead that are paid officers, I can catch them on the Zoom and we can have a chat, clarify some things, and then they move on. But when school is up, UT students tend to be over, they're so over-talented that they take on so many things. They're in orgs, fraternities, sororities. They may do, if they're non-athletes, they'll do the club sports, and they're just overcommitted. So it's hard to get them in person, but it's easy on Zoom.
That's the same with my students, overcommitted, really thin. They don't understand that. It's like, hey, you're in all these organizations, but if you're only able to give that org 10%, we look at you like, you're only giving me 10%. That's right, a bad result.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, you know why.
We teach them how to balance.
Students will, and my almost 10 years of higher education experience, the reason students do that is, for one, they figure if they're trying to be Greek, they're going to put more on their resume and more on their whatever. Exactly. Well, it's a game to play. We respect that. But then also, you know, once you get involved, it leads to other things. Everything, you know, you kind of, you meet new people and they say, hey, Drew, I'm also involved in this, man, and we do this. And now Drew's doing this, and then somebody in there might say, Drew and Kate, we also doing this. You're like, oh, and who in there? Oh, you said there's girls in that joint? Then you start going to do that. And so it becomes, and before you say it, before you know it, you spread so thin. And today's students, man, they just trying to be in everything just because, you know, I'm Kappa. I'm also an SG. I'm also an orientation leader. I'm also got an internship. But like to Drew's point, the message though is, are you giving it your all, or are you just showing up sometimes when you can, which is not the message that, you know, because you can't give 10% of your job and get a paycheck, get 100% paycheck.
No. So I think I'm on the same page with y'all. We try to show the student leaders to balance, you know, and if they're going to work in our center, in our multicultural center, I asked them, commit to us for a year and give us like a higher percentage of your input and your energy, and then maybe another year you are head of your frat sorority and or you're in student government, you know, but try to, you know, separate it and not be overcommitted so you're failing at everything.
That kind of reminds me, man, we learn life lessons so young sometimes. So you think about like Cape now, when we first started playing ball and we started playing with you have a good game, other AAU team might try to pick you up. And then but you have to be like, you know what? We start learning at a young age, like, nah, I've been riding with this team for so long. Like, my team, right? It's loyalty, right? Even though you might have a better opportunity, if we're good enough, they're going to find me. And so, but I don't know if students really catch on to that. Every time they see something that might be better, they just, oh, I'm going to go to that. I'm going to be there. I'm going to go to that. So he's like, really don't know.
Y'all know that's a generational thing, because I think we were taught to kind of have some more loyalty, work where you plan it, but they're ready to go to the next thing and what's popping off here. This looks a little shinier. And then you got a lot of young folks that's all over the place and can't build anything.
I've seen a student athlete that I knew, he transferred 3 times and he's not even a senior yet. Wow.
And so to that point, if you think about this, think about how student athletes are just young, the younger generation, Gen Z, let's just call them what they are. If they grow up, playing sports for instance. So they're growing up in a time where everybody gets a trophy, right? You know, top winner, everybody's getting a trophy. We on the team, y'all play the most minutes. I never play, but we get the same trophy. Crazy. Anyway, don't get me started on that. But then you get to high school, and sometimes kids are transferring out of different high schools because the grass is green over here. Oh, no, the grass is green over here. Or no, actually, I'm a senior. I need to go play this prep school because so-and-so the year before went to the NBA or went over to whatever that might look like, right? And so then you get to college, and now the fact that you don't have to sit out a year, you can just go right to playing, basically. Yeah. And so we're teaching young people that if you're not happy, you don't have to stick to it. You don't have to, you know, make it work. You can just leave. But really, in the real world, sometimes you need to sit there and figure it out. Sometimes it's you that's the problem.
You're moving to three schools and it's you.
If everywhere you go, there's a problem, you're the problem.
You're the problem. So I see we have some similar responsibilities to coach folks.
Definitely. Yeah. So, man, you know, school started back for y'all in August. We going back in August. I think, Kate, they're going back in August. How do you feel about, like, returning to campus?
Man, I'm hoping that some kind of therapeutic or vaccine is developed. And I'm at a big school, so UT, we have a medical school, so we've already said and publicly said we're going to do our own testing. So we have that capacity at being a big tier one. Y'all know UT has the buckets. Now, everybody suffers with the pandemic, but UT got some buckets, so we're going to do our own testing and that kind of thing. So I feel safe about that. I'm ready to get active, but I know I want to do it safe. But I'm ready, like y'all. Y'all have the energy. You ready for in-person, even if it's kind of scaled down a little bit to be safe or social distancing. But I'm ready for the engagement. I'm ready, you know. I'm ready to go. I can go to my building and swipe in and be alone. So I think I've been one time a week just to get out of the house.
Man, I told Kate, I think I told you and Kate this. I helped with move out like these last 2 weeks. Man,
you were telling me.
Ever, just because it's not even doing a whole lot, but just to see face is to make that like, hey, how you been? Even though I got and gloves and I'm taking your temperature.
I have the temperature thing there.
I don't want to be too invasive, but I gotta check your temperature real quick, man. Here you go.
Yeah. Hey, make sure we all safe.
I'm gonna be honest with you though. I'm a little hesitant and apprehensive about going back to campus.
Okay.
Because now, you know, I love being around people. I think anybody that works on a college campus and student affairs specifically, that's why you're in this line of work, for the engagement, especially doing what you do, Malik. And I know at my former university, I was the director of student engagement. So I loved it. The students, man, I mean, God knows, you know, you get on your nerves, but you love them, right? They're kind of like your kids, right? But at the University of South Carolina, same thing. I love our campus, love our students, but I'm in a different role where I don't see a lot of students like I did before. And so I'm like, I mean, I've been working at home for almost 10 weeks now. It'll be 10 weeks after tomorrow. And so I'm kind of used to working from the crib and being productive and like getting stuff done, having all this technology we got with meetings and Microsoft Teams is the platform we use. And I'm thinking, now, why am I going to campus where I could possibly catch something? I could be in jeopardy. And I like to think I'm in good health, but I don't know how my body will respond. Not only that, I'm going to come home, kiss my wife in the mouth, be around my son. And if I get it, if I'm notified that I get, I'm feeling bad, I go get checked. You tell me I have to be quarantined for 14 days away from them. And when I could sit right here and work from home and not worry about anything. So I'm a little
No, I respect that caution because we don't know. They tell us that we have testing, that they're wiping down things, and then we get there and we get a crowd and then things start happening. So you're right. It's going to be a test.
How many students
all got wild, in Texas? Right?
How many students at University of Texas?
50,000.
We got 36.
No, 36, yeah.
Where you going, Drew?
I was gonna say the crazy thing is we all got wives, right? We all got families, and that fact that they're saying, okay, we're coming back, but you know, a case situation optional. It's kind of one of those things to where it's like, if you go in and you get it, I'm blaming you for bringing it back to the house because you didn't have to do that. Like, you know what, man? I'm gonna just chill. Just chill.
That's funny. How about y'all? Have y'all heard about this NCAA saying that June 1st they can start coming back to workout practice? Y'all been hearing some fears and all?
I heard that this morning, man. I saw that this morning on ESPN. And really, all I saw that is like, you know what? They seen the dollar sign starting to drift. Yo, we got to do something. And they're like, I feel like everyone's saying we don't want to be the guy to like cut everything off. So it's kind of like, I'm saying, if you get it, you get it. But we don't want to be the person that says we're going to cut it down. Because no one wants to say I cut off $4
billion. Oh, exactly. And they always say sports is the front door to the university. And yeah, I hear you. But I just want us to be safe.
Especially at the University of Texas, especially at the University of South Carolina. I mean, I'm on
conference calls. Yes, sir. Gamecock,
And it's not a secret. I mean, at the end of the day, when every Saturday, every six times out of the year, the University of South Carolina, we got an 80,000 seat stadium and it's packed. Not only is it packed in there, but it's packed around there because the tailgates, it's packed around the restaurants, the bars. People inside are buying food and paraphernalia.
Right.
And so you're talking about big dollars and cents. I don't know how you play football. I don't know how you play a contact sport, though. unless they're going to plan on testing everybody every single day. Because here's the thing, let's just talk this thing out. Let's figure this out. And I'm no scientist, I'm no doctor in that regard, but let's just figure this out. If we're on a football team, and I would assume they're gonna do the scans every day, they're gonna take our temperatures, they're gonna have tests, we're gonna have to get tested, right? We're gonna have to. Yeah. Every day. Yeah. How long does it take to get the results? Do y'all know?
Well, for a top echelon of school, I'll say a Power 5 school, they can get in a few hours.
They can get the test in a few hours.
I think you're right. Because it's a few things. It's the temperature that's immediate. You know, I know they're going to do that. Right. But you're right. I don't know about how frequent you would test. And I think they're going to go against science. They're going to say, we'll test you if you're symptomatic. But then if you're asymptomatic, you can shred it. So it's really, we're saying we're tired of being at home. We opening this up. The Republican governor is saying, we opening up.
It's difficult conversations that we keep trying to find these barriers to have, but and honestly, we just got to have it. Like, look,
yeah,
if we play football this year, we can't stand to lose that amount of money.
That's right.
For everybody, like, everybody's having that conversation.
Yeah.
Breaks down to this, like, okay, we do the testing, right?
Yeah.
I'm making sure my top, this is what Jared Dudley says. He's like, yo, guys like LeBron and AD, we making sure they don't go nowhere. We might wrap them in bubbles. So you college level, you're really gonna see who your top guys are. Like, yo, y'all don't leave this area. Cause if you get it, the quarterback gets it.
But y'all, it doesn't make sense based on science. If I'm not showing symptoms, I still can spread it. But you know, it's a no win. They're just going ahead saying, we gave you this 2 months off, that's it. So it's like, you know, survival of the fittest. And I hope we're not headed that way, but.
Hey, man, it sounds like, I asked him, I was like, how you feel about it? He's like, hey man, you know what? They just like, basically, like, you die, I mean, hell. It's like, God.
We gave you that one stimulus and some time off, but.
Yeah, like, it's tough, man.
I pray, I'm all some seriousness. I pray. That a college or anybody really, but since we're talking about college sports, I pray that none of our student athletes in the country gets this and passes away, because then you see what I'm saying? Because
priority will shift.
Oh my goodness! Can you imagine?
Just imagine if that was one of our sons. That university would never open again. Like,
it'll be called Cape and Drew University. That's what that school would be called.
Man. But I think that's where we're headed. You know, it doesn't make sense until we have a therapeutic or vaccine. If I can be look healthy but still spread it and whatever. So
uh-huh. Can you imagine, man, Texas, man, I've heard great things about Texas athletics, right? But can you imagine Texas losing that revenue for their sports, that fall sports? Like, what that would look like?
Man, and y'all know we're the top revenue producers for football, I understand. We're the top. So, yeah. It's so funny. I look at Twitter and Instagram, and the engagement is like every day we're engaging boosters and fans, like, you know, we're still alive. I'm watching the marketing, you know.
Oh yeah. Now, I don't know how true this is.
It's daily engagement that we're coming back, you know. That revenue was big, you know. Y'all know football is king in the South, you know. And not even the South anymore, it's, you know, all over, all universities.
I heard this a while ago. They were telling me, somebody told me that Texas has an unlimited budget when it comes to athletics.
I've heard that. I know we're the number one revenue producing, and I hear rumors about, like, man, you know, deep pockets.
Hey, y'all
that oil money out there.
That oil, right?
And
that
listen, oil. You know, y'all basketball coach came from this right here. When Shaka Smart, shout out to Shaka Smart, man. When he left ECU, I said, I was mad because I said, man, at first I thought I was mad because I said, like, I felt like he was about to take BCU to be the Gonzaga, right? Like Mark Few.
I've heard that. Right? Yeah.
I mean, he was just on his way. But then I said, you know what? There's certain jobs.
Texas calls.
Come on, man. You got to go.
You got to take it.
You got to take Texas because you got unlimited. You know, you go from being on, you know, charter planes and to private jets in a matter of a signature.
And y'all know we got this basketball stadium coming up, right?
Nah, I didn't hear that. Y'all got a new
stadium? Yeah, we have a new basketball stadium that a billionaire that's a Texas booster or a Texas alum. Yeah, we have a stadium coming up, basketball, on campus.
Man.
So
BCU yeah, doing deep pockets. That, man. We got a new workout facility not too long ago. It's nice, but I'm sure it ain't Texas nice.
But y'all, let me ask you this: with like, even though Texas is very wealthy, you know, that kind of thing, it seems like every university is still going to be hit with some budget, you know, cuts and furlough, and no matter how big you are, and that kind of thing. What are y'all hearing about universities and budgets?
I talked to somebody yesterday that was in worked on campus with me, and they were like, their department is getting a 60% budget cut. And I was, I'm like, well, dang, man, I got a couple pins in my book bag. I can kind of throw that over to you because your office supplies are definitely not going to happen. So right. It was tough. You try to just lighten the mood, but yeah, it's like, you just, it's like you cringe, like you're about to see a car crash. Like, you just see it happening and you just don't want to look at it just yet.
Yeah, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, at our school, there was talks about that because at the beginning, when the decision wasn't made about whether we were going to return, and, you know, certain administrators talking about taking pay cuts, you know, the top tier people, of course, you know, like close to a mil or a mil. Mm-hmm. A year, and but we haven't heard anything so far. I mean, I would say I think our university has done a good job in of planning for just the next 5 to 10 years, when we know that the population is decreasing as far as people aren't having as many kids, for instance. And so mm-hmm. gearing up, prepping for that lower enrollment number that's coming. And we do a good job of recruiting out-of-state students, so they pay a higher tuition rate, and international students and whatnot. So I think they've kind of prepared. And then, like we say, we got football. We, you know, football brings in crazy money, and we benefited from it. I mean, across the board, not just – I mean, people don't understand. School like Texas, school like University of South Carolina, where football is king, it keeps a lot of departments
that's true
safe and straight and financially sustained, you know, and it's just what it is. And, you know, but God forbid, you know, I don't know what's that going to look like after, if we don't have a football season though. I don't know what that's going to look like. How do you see Texas, as well as the Big 12, handling the idea of no fall sports and the revenue loss? We kind of talked about it, but you know, just because, I mean, I know Texas is huge, but you also got like Oklahoma in your conference, where football is king. Kansas, Oklahoma State. I mean, what do you think? How you think every day? What's going on with the conference?
Man, it's so funny. I took some students to OU for like a conference of Big 12 like leaders, but I don't know. I think my guess is with y'all is that the smaller schools within the Big 12, like OU is well funded, Kansas, you know, KU, that kind of thing. I think it depends on what you said about South Carolina. If they had a good budget plan, if they have if they're ready for a shortfall, if depending on their funding sources. So if they have some other investments in their, or the enrollment is up, I think they're going to be fine. But if they didn't build on their enrollment or didn't have a good business plan to kind of head any economy loss, I think they're going to struggle, you know, because some of them are funded differently from taxes, and a lot of them are state schools, so they're funded through taxes. And the governors are trying to tell, I think, Big 12, any of the schools, kind of make sure your higher ed budget is smart and be ready for a shortfall. So it's going to depend on just how they're structured and their revenue.
Can you see, let's say it works out, we got football season, but can you see UT having a game in that massive stadium with no fans?
No one, everybody I talk to, they just can't imagine that, no fans. So I think, like with y'all, I think the people behind the scenes, the athletic directors, they're trying to come up with some kind of plan to, even if you did lower capacity, you know, how can you keep people safe? But you're right, I can't imagine no fans, you know. So now if they come up with they've been using this word hybrid plan where it's 50% capacity, 75%, they may try some things just to get some fans in this thing, but kind of space people out. I know they're working behind the scenes, but at UT we have been hearing hybrid plans, 50% capacity, less capacity. Now we will announce the end of June kind of what the plans are. So I know, you know, with media and universities or any entity, they throw out stuff to see how people respond while they're behind the scenes planning something. So they throw us things here and there and then to see how we react, you know. I've been hearing lower capacity. So they may try just spacing people out instead of empty.
Man, it's tough, man, because I saw on the news, right, they're getting ready to go into our phase two where they're, like, opening up restaurants. And the guy was saying on one show, he was like, you know, on our bars, you know, we used to fit 50 people at the bar.
Yeah. Man,
we can only fit 20, 25. And I'm just thinking, like, but aren't you going to lose a lot of revenue? Just like,
yeah.
And it's just like, man, if you're going to lose half your revenue anyway, is the point of opening?
So, you know, the NCAA approved likeness for student athletes. How do you see it impacting students, especially at the University of Texas? And can you speak on a little of the amenities that Texas offers its student athletes?
Right. Well, I'm a fan of them gaining revenue off of their likeness and eventually more revenue in the future because they provide so much wealth to, you know, not only Texas, big schools, small schools around the country. So I want them to share in more revenue. That's just my philosophy. If you're producing all of this, these profits, I want them to kind of have a share. It's so unique that they have these football profits are so huge, and it's based on these brothers mostly, you know, playing ball. So they have to share. So I'm glad that they'll have some of the funds from their likeness. Now, you know, like big schools, as you know, some of the amenities are, besides the obvious, you know, great practice facilities, there are staff who are great at like life coaches and professional development. We make sure we're trying to build where we get more brothers, well, more athletes, I'll say. I'm talking about brothers because I see, you know, like football. So, but for men and women, we're trying to get them abroad. So, you know, been working with either basketball coaches, men's and women's, or football to say, hey, let's go abroad before the summer practice happens. So maybe we got one or two with our Cape Town trip abroad. Now, athletics is getting smart because they realize other schools like Michigan and USC are getting abroad a little bit more. So athletics did take some students for like a two-week trip to, I would say a week trip to Northern Africa. So Morocco, and they did some program where they built a sports, small complex, sports complex in whatever city they're visiting. So Morocco was one. I think they did something in Panama and then something in the Caribbean. So they're trying to get the athletes abroad, even if it's to the Caribbean real quick or to Northern Africa. You know, I was really impressed that they did that. And they didn't just take football, they took various sports. So obviously big schools, we have those amenities of making sure they do internships when they can during the school year. You know, a lot of our students will go to our very esteemed Dell Children's Hospital. But football loves that particular visit. So those amenities are there. But as far as like for your likeness, you're gonna need probably production, media. We have all that on campus. And I think well, football has access to professionals, even if they get Matthew McConaughey. I mean, we have access to our radio and television film folks. Mm-hmm. He's a professor and a big booster, as you know. So we have access to, you know, how are you going to market and imaging aesthetics. So we have all that at the university. And athletics is connected to people who have that skill set. So I think, you know, we'll do well with that, you know. What do y'all think? Hey, this is all new, too. Cali first did it, and then...
Because I can remember when we were in school, Cave, I think it was like you could do something like one every 4 years, like you could take a trip abroad. And I'll tell you, we liked it then. We weren't in love with it then. But now, that's like one of the biggest things that I've take away from my college experience. Like I tell people, you know, I got to go to the NCAA tournament, and we got to go to England.
That's dope.
Like just that experience, even though we were young, we didn't appreciate it at the time. You know, but now I look back on it, I'm like, dang, man, not everybody can say, yo, I went to England for a week.
Yeah.
And we went to England. We had no idea what that meant. All I remember is we got some new sweet BCU gear, some new little wetsuits, and we all looked sweet on the flight.
Right.
And we got over there and we played in awful facilities. I mean, compared to America, I mean, the floor was slippery. The ball, I couldn't hit nothing. I remember the ball, and Drew was hurt, so Drew didn't get to play. Drew had hit his dirty tailbone. Drew tried to duck on somebody for the free throw.
Almost paralyzed myself, man.
I don't know what he was thinking. But anyway, we had Edward Jones on our last show from Kansas, and he made a good point, and I think him and Drew got the conversation started about just that we believe, and I agree, that female student athletes are going to be the most, they're going to benefit the most potentially from likeness, because, you know, there's a lot of talented student athletes out there, and a lot of them are good looking student athletes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you give you think about the lady from Oregon, and Drew gave this example, or Edward did, the young lady from Oregon this past year that was triple-doubling everything. She was tight with Kobe. She lefty. Yeah. I love lefty ball players, so I was a fan. She was out there killing it. You give her some kind of opportunity to market some type of brand in Oregon, so I'm thinking –
yeah,
I mean, and so Nike. Is Nike going to have to do, if they got a shoe deal with the university, with the department, does then a girl like her name escapes me, become a separate part? Does she get a separate type of situation?
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
So, yeah. Now, Kate, you bring up a good point, because each school around the country has, like, okay, USC, that's in, you know, Hollywood area. So are they going to have some advantages that, you know, maybe someone in Idaho doesn't have? The New York, like, you know, NYU or any Rutgers, mm-hmm. New Jersey, that East Coast, you know. Now in Texas, we got, you know, we have some, we're connected to, like, a lot of famous graduates. So are the bigger schools and bigger, y'all know about when basketball goes to LA or New York, or Texas, those are big markets. So the schools in the bigger markets, are they going to have a bigger check, bigger production than,
I don't think people
than
again, really
Idaho or, you know.
I don't think people understand how long Texas money is. Like,
it's that oil, y'all. It's that oil.
Yeah, I mean, like, you can have USC, you can have LA, you can have all that. But I just feel like, I don't think people really grasp that Texas oil money. How much of an impact that can have.
And it's generational. It's like
great-great-great-grandfather
and everybody after him goes to Texas. And you get this sense of, like, pride to give back to them.
And that brand is valuable. And like I said, I always tell people when it comes to endowment, Harvard, usually it's Harvard, Yale, number two. Sometimes UT beats out number two for the second – largest endowment. So that's what we working with.
Ain't nobody getting furloughed over there, man. Ain't nobody. Y'all do it for like 10.
Y'all know how y'all know how even the wealthy will kind of trim things out just to keep that way. So, you know, we all will see. But y'all make a good point. It's like, how is that going to be rolled out? Who's going to benefit? If people in Oregon, are they going to, you know, benefit from that Nike, you know, access? You don't know.
You're going to start to see, like, a lot of sports that we might not think of. Like, I can remember we were talking to a guy, student athlete from Oregon. We were like, you know, basketball is probably running things in football. He's like, man, women's track. We were like, really?
I've heard that too, y'all. I've heard that. I'm learning that. Women's track. Like,
wow. So just imagine
and
that.
Drew, to your point, maybe women's track and men's and women's track can kind of get their due now.
Yeah, definitely.
Football is top. Basketball, if you're in East Coast, you know.
Man, I'll tell you this, man. I've always hated on dudes on the track team, man. Because I'm like, man, why are you so ripped up, man? For what? so they're probably gonna start getting some of their due now. I can see that. Yeah.
And I throw this in there before we move on. Think about volleyball players, man.
I'm seeing this when it comes to sisters, they are dominating at Texas. That's growing, and they're getting more shine. They have that swag. So y'all make a good point that it's going to be not the people we thought, like football only. It's going to be the other sports that's going to make
I heard Texas women volleyball is, like, really good. Like,
Yeah.
Y'all,
and brothers, that's the benefit of being at UT. I can – when Dr. Moore teaches the Black Power Movement, all of these super athletes come to the class. So when he teaches Black Power Movement at UT, we have the we call it the white Greeks, the black Greeks, the Hispanic – all the athletes, men and women, are in this room, 500, 600 people. So that's how I get to engage with student athletes. When I go to that class twice a week, Dr. Moore welcomes me to come in because he knows I'm a build community by just answering some questions, sometimes as a visitor, hanging around in the beginning or after to chop it up with the student athletes. That's how I get to know them. And like y'all said, I see the volleyball, women, basketball, track, everyone.
Another shameless plug. When we first started this podcast, we got a we were just sharing our brand, sharing what we were doing all on LinkedIn and everything. This lady, I forget her name, I forget what school, she reached out to us and was like, "This is awesome. Could I use this for my curriculum? Could I use one of your pods?" You remember that, Drew? Could we use some of your material for, like, class discussion and add it to our curriculum? And I'll tell you, man.
I'm not surprised.
I'll tell you, we've gotten some accolades over the past year and a half for doing this and some, you know, pats on the back. But when I tell you that was the best moment.
Because, y'all on the curriculum.
Man, listen. I never thought I would be the person I am today, how I care so much about education and influence. Drew knows me very well. I can't believe that I'm at this place in my life. But when I almost dropped a tear, man, because you're talking about, I'm like, us? Like, what we're talking about? You're going to add that to a curriculum and class discussion, Blackboard assignments? That right there, I'm just like, yo, if that means we lived and we were here. When you start talking about stuff like that, I'm like, okay, life has a different purpose now.
But Kate, Drew, I'm not surprised, because when you presented, again, you had the research, you had the energy, you could communicate the findings. Like I said, everybody can't do that. Just because, you know, a few people sit down and maybe read all the sports books and all of the research about student athletes. Yeah, y'all have done that, but you got to have the live experience. You got to have the love that y'all have for developing. You have the desire to develop people, to take them from one spot to the next. That's a gift. So I was able to, I felt that when y'all presented, and I could see why they would want you in the curriculum, because I've helped update curriculum at my campus, because before my job now, I work with Black Studies, and we had to develop courses and curriculum, and it had to be approved higher up. So again, I know students want the hard evidence. They want someone who's going to engage them, and then they want to kind of be better people by being around leaders. So y'all do that.
I appreciate that, man.
Yeah.
And to kind of just, you know, segue into our next thing, just, you know, being former athletes, man, the only sport really to watch right now is The Last Dance. Have you been watching it?
Yeah, I'm ready.
What do you think of it, and, like, anything that was, like, unexpected?
Man, it's so funny. I watch every episode like everyone else on the planet, and As like I said, I consider myself a developer, so I wanted to. I enjoyed hearing the backstory about how Michael and the team were successful. So a few things that kind of got me to do more reading is when. So this is what I'm. This is the hangup I have. Is this how competitive he was? I just wonder how. Is he right in saying that's the way he had to do it? And how do you teach that? Is there something you can teach to other athletes? Is it something unique that he did it that way? Can you duplicate it? Are you supposed to duplicate it? Because he was such a fierce competitor, which I think we should be. But then, I don't know. I just wonder if we should, if moving forward, if you do it differently, if you're in a different generation. Some things like,
only taught through experience, kind of like you said before. So Cape and I, we have older brothers, right?
Yeah.
We were coming up, like Jordan was, he was always competing against older brother, but kind of getting beat up a little bit. And so that's how my brother and I had those same like battles. We'd be playing one-on-one and we would fight, right?
Yeah.
Like it got to that point. But you look at a guy like LeBron, he doesn't have any brothers, he doesn't have any siblings, but he always wanted to be a family. So now it makes sense that, like, you know what? He does want everybody to like him. I can see that.
He wants that peace.
Yeah, he didn't have anybody picking on him and beating him up. He was always the guy.
He's like a consensus builder, wants that peace. Yeah. And but Jordan was single focus. I'm gonna get mine and you gonna go with me this way for us to get that end result.
I'm top guy, I'm going at him.
And so I don't know if y'all can relate to that. I appreciate the dog, the energy, the winning. But then because we work with students, the relationship part was just dinging in my head about, I don't know about that part. But he was doing what we were taught. You know, get your man and get your success at all costs. But y'all know we try to have families and get back to the community. So that part was like, ooh, how do you balance that?
It sting, right? It sting a little bit.
Let me ask you this, Malik.
Hey, what do you think?
We don't have that kind of time. This is about you. Just want to ask you, though, because as you know, Jordan catches a lot of flack, especially since the documentary came out, but about not being involved with social justice movements and political aspects. You know, they talked about, I think, Senator Grant in North Carolina. He didn't want to put himself out there. And, of course, the famous phrase that Republicans buy Nikes too, right?
Yeah.
And so my question is because now, I want to hear you, and then I'll kind of, whatever you say, I'll kind of give you my spiel. But, you know, with today's athletes, like LeBron is very outspoken about, you know, when things happen.
Giving back.
You know, right? Police brutality, killings, any kind of racial injustices that he's made aware of. He says stuff on his platform, and and that's beautiful. He's got the family and all that, but that, you know, people are saying, I had a friend of mine that says, LeBron is our Ali, and Michael Jordan was more like Money Mayweather. Okay? We disagree. He's a good friend of mine. I love him to death, but I told him, I can't go that far. What are your thoughts on Jordan and the way he's perceived for not being as outspoken as people wanted him to be and only playing basketball? Because it's the phrase, shut up and dribble. And Jordan said in the documentary, my job was to play basketball, and that's what I did. What are your thoughts?
When I look back, I've always heard that quote about, you know, Republicans buy shoes too. My personal thought, I wish he could have balanced more social justice given back to the Black community, especially where he came from. And I'm learning that his parents were involved with that, some of the politics in that area. But my personal, with all of the energy and smarts that he has, I wish he would have done more. And that's just how how I feel, because I believe I was taught to give back, whether you're wealthy or not, give back in volunteering money, time for other people. And I know he had the capacity when you look at his parents. It's not like he had some cold parents who were just single, you know, focused. They seemed like they were some great folks. Yeah. He definitely listened to mom to make that Nike trip, didn't he?
Yeah, I know. Mama
always knows best.
Mama was right on that.
Man,
but I wish.
I try to watch it in that time frame of, okay.
Yeah.
He is, we probably look at him, he could do more in today's capacity, like before we look at it from today's lens, right?
Yeah. But
back in that day, man, he was pushing the envelope. Cause you think about, and when he came into the league, guys were just, it was on tape delay, right? You know, guys that was doing cocaine during, like, before the game, right? In his era, he probably did a lot.
Straight and narrow.
Yeah, like, as far as, even though LeBron took it to another level.
Yeah.
All part of progression, like, you know, it's good. That, but I don't necessarily.
You
know,
Drew, I hear you. I think he had examples, though. He had Ali, you know. You had Kareem, you know, who had was conscious, and so even if it was small, I think he just could have did a little bit more, you know.
Yeah,
and I think he's trying to do some stuff now, slowly but surely. But I think with the way he was raised and the knowledge he had of like Ali and Kareem, this is my opinion. Yeah. He could have did more. I don't know if I would say he has to do it this way or that way, but he could have done more as energetic and as influential as he was back then. But I wonder, now you got me thinking, oh my goodness, I hope I don't mess up the time. What do y'all think about people? I felt a certain kind of way when he was revealing some of the mistakes that his teammates made. I don't, unless you sign a
release,
I don't know if you should be airing all that.
Well, let me say this real
quick.
Break
that down for me, y'all.
Before I lose my train of thought on the whole,
because
I have to defend MJ. I have to, in my mind, we're like really tight, so I got to defend him really quick. I agree that in some aspects he could have done more. You know, as a black man, you know, older now, like with things going on, ain't nothing changed. It's still crazy. There was stuff going on in the 90s. It's still going on today. Mm-hmm. I mean, hell, what was going on in the 60s is still going on today. So anyway, I believe his voice could have had somewhat of an impact. We'll never know. But I don't think we should crucify him for not doing more.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And that's my problem with people saying that he should have done more. Because he didn't, I can't stamp him as a GOAT. Well, here's what I say. Yeah. Here's what I say.
You can't crucify him.
We can't crucify that man for only focusing on his craft. Because of the fact that he focused on his craft, he became the GOAT. And because he became the GOAT, he inspired the LeBron Jameses of the world, Wades of the world, the Kobe Bryants of the world, and the list goes on and on. Yeah. And so then, like Drew's point, very good point, the times are different now. See, in the 80s and 90s, yes, he had Ali as an example, but he also saw how the world and brands and well, not the world, but America, the 1% turned on Ali. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. True.
He saw that. True. He saw Ali do jail time. Okay.
True.
He understood that if I focus on my craft, that then everything else, his words, will fall into play. Today's athletes jumping on social justice and they're using their platforms as they should. But let's not get it twisted. There's some income that comes along with them speaking their voices and being a part of these commercials. And they're getting paid now. Let's not act like that's not happening. I'm not saying that that's why they're doing it. I believe their heart's in the right place. But being socially woke and fighting injustices is sexy now. It wasn't sexy in the 80s and 90s.
Right.
It's sexy. But to your question, I don't like how he threw his teammates under the bus about doing cocaine. Because can you imagine being the guy that was a part of his team in the 80s and you're watching that with your family and he says that and your wife looks at you like, what? You were doing what?
You were wilding every day?
I'll tell you, man, I still you think about Jordan, right? You always saw him clean cut, suit, hoop earring, saying the perfect thing, maybe a little bit of charisma in there, but you got to see like his personality and like just that part was like, hey man, I really appreciate that. Like you shooting the breeze. Like, you really, like, you're not like, I'm just being politically correct in this answer. Like, I've seen you talking to guys, like, saying things that I say to my boys. Like,
now that's true. Like, that's true.
Dang, okay. All right. That's what's up. That's what I wanted.
Yeah. And then his relationship with his security guard, the Gus, where he's got Gus, right?
That story, that touched my heart, man.
And how his wife was saying that he was there for him in the hospital.
When he had cancer and all
and
that.
He needed him because, you know, he was calling him at 3 a.m. I mean, I didn't know about Gus. And I'm going to tell you what shocked me, too. The food poisoning part. Because we thought it was the flu game for 20
years.
Yeah.
Yep. That was crazy. That was crazy. But I thought the series was just extraordinary. But that part where, why can't I think it? What's his second?
Pippen? Scottie Pippen?
When he didn't go back in that game.
Man, I heard about that. But seeing it, it was like, whoa.
you didn't see it when we watched it, when it happened. Like, I remember that happening, but I don't remember. I remember the game, I should say. And you remember hearing stories about how he was pissed off, but to see him, like, literally pouting somewhat and Bill Cartwright, like, saying, come on, dude. Like, what are you talking about? And then to hear that Bill Cartwright, like, cried in the locker room because he was so disappointed. Mm-hmm. And you're like, yo. And then for him to say, you guys are right, I apologize. And you know, low key, Pip was kind of like mad when Kukoc hit that shot.
He probably was.
I'm sure that's going to come up a lot with when it comes to this, like, leadership and pushing through disappointment to doing what's right for the team. You know,
yeah. Pippen didn't look the best in this documentary. I will say that.
but. I swear, Drew, I don't know if you knew this. I didn't know he was so underpaid. I really never knew that either.
That got me upset too, y'all.
Man.
I'm on a family chat with my cousins, and we talked about that at length. I said, you mean 26. He didn't get paid? And I believe stuff like that still happens today if you don't have good people around you.
Yeah. He was underpaid.
Contracts.
He was underpaid, but when he was finally getting mad about it, it was like, man, I'm not finna pay you. Your back's messed up. The guy, like, like that was 2 years ago. We should have had this conversation.
No, and they told him not to sign that deal, but
the owner said he wouldn't have signed it.
Right, and somebody had to correct me on this thing, and I had to think about it from this perspective. When you're coming from, like, his, you know, him saying, you know, he came from
background,
dirt poor, all these siblings, small town.
Yeah.
You're thinking, how can I secure the bag? You don't know what tomorrow looks like. You're not thinking about yourself in the way. You hit $3 million or $7 million. That's you're it. Like, we set. We good. I was happy that he got paid in Portland, though. Once he got paid in Portland, he got
okay, money. There we go.
And I don't think anybody was holding out back then either. So it would have been like, it was yeah. Somebody had to be the poster boy for bad contracts. He was up there.
but y'all, finally on Jordan, I respect that he said and he told his teammates, I want the best for you. And it wasn't just, I don't believe it was just for him to win. It was for the team to win. So if he in a healthy way said, Cape, you need to do more of this and more of this, and I'm here practicing, you need to do better. I do respect that. Because he was talking to them man to man. He was with them. It wasn't like he was somewhere else clowning on them. He was like, join me with this excellence. I like that.
And at the end of the day, Malik, all of them are champions. For the rest of their lives, they're champions. Sir. And yeah, the way he was really treating Scotty Burrell, I was like, yo, that's borderline bullying for real. Like,
y'all thought bullying was bad now, boy. This is bullying.
But to this day, they're tight. Like, you hear them talking.
Yeah,
they play golf together now.
And they're tight.
And so, you know, what you going to do if Jordan is on? It's Jordan, dog.
It's like, Jordan.
Get with the program or you going to be traded. Or you ain't
like, if he wants better for me, I'll take the clowning if I know he wants best for me. And I think that that was evident to them.
Being a part of history and a legacy, man, I think at the end of the day, if they don't win six, there's no documentary. There's no.
So it took all of them.
Yeah. And so,
I heard the mailman is saying some stuff like, I'm a man too, just like him.
Who said him, Brian Russell, Patrick Ewan, they didn't really want to do nothing with the documentary. They didn't want to be, it couldn't be reached for interview. They ain't wanted to do it.
You're like, I'm Why a man too.
Yeah, I've been seeing it. Like Patrick Ewan's like, man, I had to live through all that stuff, man. I don't want to go back and talk about it. Yeah. Man, the two biggest things I took away was when Jordan was like, just from a leadership standpoint, was like, I'm demanding, but I'm not gonna ask you to do anything that I wouldn't do.
There we go. There we go.
Reminded me of this. I've been listening to a lot of Audible books now, and I was listening to this Jay Will book about Coach K, and he was all like, man, Coach K had this funny way of saying things like, look, guys, I'm down here in the trenches, right? I want somebody that's gonna be in the trenches. Take my hand and let me help you get down here with the trenches. Take my hand. That's cool. Mm-hmm. But I'm gonna get somebody here that's gonna take my hand.
Yeah.
Kind of gave me chills.
I'll follow someone that's trying to follow something healthy and wanting me to get better, and I'm all for that, you know.
Yeah. Well, let's get down to the last question, man.
All right.
What's been your biggest takeaway from being in the quarantine? Just, you know, with the family, you know, if you have any new hobbies or just a chance to reflect.
Man, that's a great question. I got to think about my wife because we've had some, since we were around each other a little bit longer, we had a few talks where I had to apologize and she had to apologize because we were figuring out ways. She was on Zoom calls and maybe I need to go upstairs or I'm down here in the living room. So one of the biggest things is, and we've been married for like 18 years, but we have a different bond from being in quarantine. We had some conflicts and it was like little things about, you know, space and, oh, I thought you were off the Zoom. Now I got to get on. I had to go to my laptop because we were sharing one laptop. I said, to keep married, let me go and get my laptop from the office and bring home.
That was a good choice, my brother.
Yeah. But we were able to do like, you know, bike ride together, cook together, you know, some things that we've done in the past, but haven't had a chance to do. So, you know, just really bonding with her. And again, catching students that would have been super busy in person, but catching them on Zoom has been fun, you know. Mm. And I can get a group of people, you know, committed people. Whereas before the schedules were crazy. So just better information. And I'll tell you something my colleagues told me, because we check in every week for the folks I work with at UT in the Cultural Center. They said, Malik, boy, you are so busy when we're in person because students need your energy. But on Zoom, you have all these creative ideas that you usually don't have in the meetings in person. And I was like, wow. And they said, we think it's because you always have to look out for this one and that one. Students come and seek you out. And so by the time you get to a meeting, you're like, if it's not crazy, I'm going to say yes to that. I don't have to contribute anything else. I like what y'all are saying. But they said I'm more creative on the Zoom.
Yeah.
I don't have distractions or anything.
You got to find a lot of different creative ways on Zoom, man. It's because...
Yeah.
It gets old fast.
Yeah. I've been on some Zooms with the glass of wine.
I think all of us can attest to what you're talking about with your spouse, man. You know, can you be quiet? I literally had to reschedule my morning meetings with my assistant because it conflicted with my wife's 10 a.m., so I had to move mine up 30 minutes because she said it's my voice carries, which I know is true. But I was like, you change your schedule, you know. I changed my schedule, you know, happy wife, happy life. You know how that goes.
Amen, amen. I appreciate this wisdom. Y'all keep on sharing, y'all. What
you got to do? Hey, 18 years, I think I'm only eight in the game. It'll be eight this September, man. So congrats on that 18 years. That's beautiful.
Hey, thank you. Yeah. I see the pictures of y'all's wives. Y'all look good. And what I can see from the pictures, y'all go on date nights. Y'all go to banquets. Y'all are doing it right. As a veteran, y'all are doing it right. I see the posts.
My wife will let me know. Hey, she already told me when this is over, you better plan an epic date night. Yeah, you're right. I got you.
Keep dating your wives. And there's a book we read some time ago, His Needs, Her Needs. You know, when she wants that back scratch, you got to do it the way. And then when I ask for one, I'm definitely want it, you know, whatever she wants and likes, you got to do it, and vice versa. They're going to do it for us. So
I always tell people, I'm like, as much as I don't want to say I put her through a lot, but the person that I was that she first met and the person I am now, I owe it to her for being with the other before the Dr. Capel. I owe her.
See, Drew know that the wild Capel. I feel we all were wild back in the day.
Drew didn't miss a minute of the wild. we were a trip. And so I look at it like, first of all, I'm just happy to be here, for one. But two, you know, it's the least I can do is to, you know, take her on dates and be nice, be kind consistently, because you know, I don't know, if I was her, I might have got rid of me a long time ago.
My wife and I, man, we've been watching like a lot of shows. So we've been finding shows to watch. But it's been actually, man, this quarantine, it's been kind of great. You know, I talked to my friends who were single, and I'm like, man, I know you're out here just hanging out with everybody. They're like, man, absolutely not. Everybody's scared to leave the crib. I was like,
they afraid that corona. Like,
yeah, we've been hanging out, watching shows. She has a real stressful job, so this has been like a relief kind of for her. She's reset everything, and she's happier. So, hey, I'm happier. But man, it's been cool, man. Just appreciate these moments, and this has been good.
Yeah, man, that's a blessing. And this real quick, I have a theory. I got to do some research on it, but because all of us brothers right here, we have all this education, we have some great verbal skills. This is my theory. I wonder, do we debate and argue with our wives more than maybe a brother and sister that didn't have similar education? You get what I'm saying? We have tools. We're paid to
communicate.
I wonder, because
we know,
because old school uncles and grandpas would just not say anything while grandma's talking, and they just would. But I kind of engage. And then,
well,
what do y'all think about that?
I'll say this, and we got about 3-4 minutes, but I'll say this. That's a great that's a great theory. I would say no, because, and it's not, I don't necessarily, it's just about education. I just think that, you know, you look at our fathers, grandfathers, the way they were wired was not to necessarily communicate their spouse. It was just, this is the way it is, it's the way I am.
Yeah.
Then when I come home, you know, I'm going to work all day. I ain't got a lot of emotional intelligence connection time. Like,
have that dinner ready and
yeah, let's just keep this ordered, make sure the kids are good. And I think now it's not only education. I think education is a part of it, but I think it's, you know, I don't want to be that tough guy. Like, I'm not tough. Like, I need my wife to like just like tell me when I'm, you know, acting crazy, or I just need that touch, man, because I'm not built to, I think our fathers held everything in, and, you know, they felt that was the way to be masculine and to be a man. That definition of manhood was just different. I don't buy into that. I define what my manhood is. My manhood is sometimes I need a hug.
Hey, man, I look at it through athletics, man. It's like, to me, like, I feel like I'm an old pro. You got to pick and choose your spots, right?
That's good.
Also, like, knowing the psychological things, knowing your teammates, right? I know, okay, I might be right, but if I flip out and it ruins the night, is it really worth saying all that?
That'd be a big loss, right?
Ruin the night, but ruin the week.
I'm gonna just ease into this, and you know what? 30, 40 minutes later, she might remember, like, oh, dang, well, oh, you were right. And I'm just sitting over there like, exactly.
Brothers, this has been awesome, man.
Yeah, man. This has been great, man. We really appreciate it, man. We gotta definitely stay connected.
Definitely, definitely.
Once this COVID is you know, gone, or we got the vaccine, hopefully you all still have the summit next year, man. But
yeah, yes, sir. And we expect y'all to be there.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll put our bid in, man. So we appreciate it. We appreciate it, and we'll talk to you soon, man.
Yeah, stay in touch. All right, y'all take care.
All right, man.
Take care. Thanks a lot.
Yes, sir.
All right.